Network, welcome back to another Pilot Network podcast. I'm one of your hosts, Adam Juhan, wishing you a good morning, good afternoon, good evening, or good night, wherever you are in the world. Hello, Matt.
How's it going?
Good. I've got to say tonight, I'm pretty excited to finally talk to this guy. He's put out some interesting stuff that we're going to get to, hopefully in later podcasts as well, because there's just a wealth of information that comes off his blog, AvBull. And tonight, though, he's going to do something that's going to help all of our kind of, I don't want to call them procrastinating fence sitter, wait and see types, but I would also call them confused lost puppies in the forest who are going.
Maybe we'll call them Matt. I am sitting here embodying that. So this is a podcast episode based off of a TPNQ article written by Jason Depew that came out in issue number 2 of TPNQ, and it's near and dear to my heart because I am literally going through logbook hell right now and trying to figure out how to turn my Air Force flight records into some sort of logbook that makes sense for civilian time. So without further ado, Jason, welcome to the podcast.
Thanks, guys. Great to be here.
Yeah. So you are actually on the road out traveling right now, house hunting. Is that right?
That's right. Yeah. Trying to convince my wife to get out of the Air Force and make some real money.
Yeah. I think sometimes that's easier said than done, and other times it's easier done than said. I know I was a done than said guy, but I can understand that your trials and tribulations with that.
Yeah. Yep.
What's your background, Jason?
I started in the B1 out of Laughlin, and I only got to do that for a couple of years. I got the lovable Tammy 21, and she sent me to AFSOC to fly the U-28 for Spec Ops for 4.5 years. And I finished up at Laughlin and did in the T-6 and did the Bacon deployment flying the E-11 Global Express while I was out there.
We were kind of talking about that before. That must have just been absolutely a blast flying that airplane.
Yeah, it was a great airplane to fly, and it was a fun group of people to hang out with for 6 months at Kandahar.
Yeah, the last part's the only part that seems to be wrong with it. You know, why couldn't they do the Bacon deployment to, like, oh, I don't know, Rota or...
Yeah, exactly. Aviano, yeah. Sigonella, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, somewhere in the other part of the world. Well, and then after the Air Force kind of finished their way with you a little bit, you recently got on with one of the major carriers. Why don't you tell us a little bit about that?
Yeah, I interviewed with Delta last June, spent a while in the pool, and this February, I started with Delta, and I'm in the MD-88 right now.
Cool. Out of New York, then?
No, I transferred to Atlanta, actually, about a month ago.
Oh, good for you. Congrats.
Cheaper and easier to live. Yeah, it's really nice.
Oh, I know. Covering Newark is every man's dream, every man and woman's dream.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, the double leg commute from Milwaukee to Newark to only to stay overnight in a hotel that I wouldn't be caught dead in again. That was my dream come true when I said, all right, time to go to Detroit as fast as possible. Anywhere other than Newark,
exactly.
I should say.
Exactly.
Well, the other thing I think that's really neat and what makes you kind of unique to TPN, especially, there's only a couple of us, a couple of networkers out there who actually have their own blog. How did you get into the AvBull thing?
Yeah. So I had a buddy at the Air Force Academy. His name's Ted Erickson. And we're flying buddies there. He's a great pilot, but the Air Force would not let him fly. Big, big mistake, big loss on their part. But they made him an engineer, a computer engineer, but he wanted to stay involved in aviation. So we were sitting around talking one day and we're like, well, let's start writing about aviation and that'll, you know, he said, that'll keep me in the game and it's something we both know about and we can kind of, you know, hang out doing that together. So we started this blog about, I guess, 6 or 7 years ago, and we've been writing ever since, and it's been pretty great. It, you know, gets us into air shows for free as press and
nice.
Gotten a couple aircraft demo rides and that kind of thing. So it's been really fun staying active in aviation that way and helping other people out with some of those articles and then keeping him active in aviation too.
That's a great way to look at it. What a cool idea.
Do you do it just for fun, or have you turned it into somewhat of a business entrepreneurial venture?
No, it's only been for fun so far. I think it makes enough to cover the hosting fees basically off of ads, but other than that, it's just the, you know, the free passes into air shows kind of thing is what we do it for.
Sure.
Amazing how a little bit of passion and can go a long way for doing stuff like that. Well, your articles are fantastic. And I think the one that we're going to focus on tonight that Matt already discussed a little bit about is the article that you had in TPNQ about logbooks. And yeah. I think my big question, okay, because we all cut the carrot up a different way, I guess you could say. And how I did it wasn't necessarily always, hasn't been deemed right by other people that I've talked to. Not to say it was wrong. And I was more curious. I said, you know, it might be a good idea to start kind of getting some other people's opinions. So why not talk to the master blogger? I said master blogger, everybody, too. Why don't we ask him what his opinion is? So how did you split your hours up when you first started the journey of tackling that major, major headache they call the logbook?
Yeah, I lucked out, and I started flying long before the military. So I had kept a logbook since day one, and I even logged all my military time in a regular kind of electronic logbook.
Oh man! So I wish I had had that information.
Yeah, you're one of those guys. He's one of those guys.
That's my biggest piece of advice to anybody: is just keep your own logbook. And if you know a new guy in your squadron, or that you work with, or that you're just buddies with, make sure they keep their own logbook. And if there's somebody out there, you know, hammering on them for that, saying it's a bad idea, you need to be focused on the mission, this and that, tell them to shut up. And there's life beyond the Air Force, you know.
Yeah.
One way or the other, whether it's 10 years in or 25 years after retirement, you're looking for another job at some point.
Yeah. Or, you know, if you ever want to buy an airplane and get insurance for it, or if you want to go to some FBO and rent a Cessna to take your dad flying, right? They're going to want to see your logbook. You're going to want to have some kind of logbook that you can show them, and it'll come in handy someday.
Starting off with one of the easy questions, what logbook kind of program do you recommend? Do you do the paper or the pen and paper, or do you do LogTem Pro or one of those?
I do pen and paper as a backup. I actually made my own a long time ago, just kind of an Excel thing. I'm a computer engineer too, so I'm a geek like that, I guess. But I've heard great things about LogTem Pro. I want to write all the companies and get samples and do an article comparing them.
Oh, that's a fantastic idea. Yeah. Go ahead.
Look for that in the future, basically, on Aviation Bowl and TPN.
That's great stuff. That's the kind of thing that I think needs to be more of, because I used LogTem Pro when I converted some of my stuff over, and fantastic program for use on the Mac, or if you want to print it out. It's really well done, and you can get into as much detail as you want. I'm one of those not very detail oriented pilots when it comes to that kind of stuff, so I was just transferring some of my civilian flying when I flew for a Part 135 company, and then my private pilot and ATP stuff like that. And one of the things I noticed though was LogTem Pro is fantastic for that kind of guy. If you're going to go out and just transfer, print, take to an airline interview, transfer, print, keep it for your own records. But if you're trying to do an active job of maintaining a logbook, like you said, for the young guy out there, the brand new lieutenant who doesn't have any flight hours or is just starting out and wants to recover that kind of stuff anyways, it costs a lot of money to have a membership or a subscription, if you will, to stay with LogTem Pro and really, really utilize that program every time you go fly. And I don't know personally if it would be worth it without having somebody who else has demoed several different types, like you're saying, to give me the best idea. And frankly, I haven't been able to find anything out there that's really valid, and to not knock any competition out there, forums and whatnot. I don't really trust a bunch of people that tell me on a website who I can't tell who they are and where they come from. So I think that'd be great, man. And let us know if we can do any, we can be any help if you need the pilot network backing. I'm sure our word and $2 will get you a cup of coffee at Starbucks, the small nice. One, the small one.
Yeah. That's something. Yeah. I'm looking forward to doing that. It's a project for the near future.
So you said you use just an Excel spreadsheet, and you said you built it on your own because of a little, nerdiness in the computer engineering world, which one of the other hosts are kind of similar to that. And I'll let you guess it's not me. So for somebody who wants to just, let's say, do it themselves, Excel is a perfectly acceptable technique, obviously. How in detail did you get? I mean, how did you break that? How did you break down the content or the content filters, if you want to call it that, all the different forms and stuff that you can use? I'll let you explain it because you know way more than I do.
Yeah, you don't have to do anything too fancy. You know, just a basic Excel spreadsheet, and you know, look at a regular paper logbook with all the columns across the top, and just put those same columns in Excel, and make sure that everything in there makes sense, and that, you know, it gives you a section to do a description of what you did on that flight. And at least, you know, put where you were going and who you were with, and if you did any maneuvers or instrument approaches, what types you did. And then just have it total it up at the bottom. And if nothing else, if that's all you did and you printed that out and signed the bottom of each page, the airlines will be happy with that, from what I've heard. And they were happy with mine. That's what I did. I just brought in a printout of my logbook and signed the bottom of each page, and they didn't question a thing.
Hey, you got the job. So there's a lot of other people out there that love to be in those same shoes, and will go through a lot more of a hell with their logbook to get it done right, especially guys who just aren't Air Force only. I mean, I had several different things that I had to enter, and it looked like garbage until I threw it into something that was at least digestible by the interviewers.
Yeah, single format is key, I think, if you can make that happen. Yeah.
For sure.
Jason, let me ask you a question. Since I am literally living this right now, so I was not fortunate enough to think to start a logbook, and definitely not maintain it throughout my 12 years as an Air Force, active duty Air Force guy. So I'm literally holding my Air Force flight records in my hand right now. What if I was getting started from scratch, which let's pretend for a moment that I am, what's the first thing I need to look at and kind of the way forward? Because this stack of paper, manually entering every line of that into an Excel spreadsheet, has been, we'll say, painful, to say at least.
Yeah, makes you want to think about stabbing your eyes out, and then you can't be a pilot anymore.
Right.
So there's kind of two approaches at that point. The first one is you take the flying history report, that it's just a summary of your flight time, and I forget which one it is, but there's the overall summary of, you know, pilot, primary, secondary, instructor time, and then it breaks it out by each aircraft in columns.
Sure.
And you can kind of take those two documents and staple them together, and then just do a quick Excel spreadsheet that gives a rough conversion of primary time into PIC time. You know, people use 80% or 90% of their primary time after they upgraded the aircraft commander, and say, that's my PIC time. And I know plenty of people who've had success at the airlines with that. The airlines understand we're military, and that trying to redo your entire logbook is a pain. And I know they accept that.
Sure.
We
hear about the percentages a lot, you know, the 80 or 90% rule of thumb percentage. Where is that coming from? How is that just an arbitrary number, or
it is, yeah.
Where is that number coming from?
That's saying, you know, if you're an aircraft commander, this is for a crewed aircraft. If you're a, you know, a fighter pilot, you don't need to worry about it. You log it all as PIC. But for a crewed aircraft, they're saying once you upgrade to aircraft commander, once you get that A code, it's very rare that you fly CT with another aircraft commander and you need to worry about who actually was the PIC on that flight. Chances are you were the PIC. You were the one in charge who signed the flight orders, and that counts as your aircraft commander time.
Sure.
So I've seen guys, you know, kind of edge toward 90% if they're short on hours and they feel like they need to give it that extra push. And I've seen people go more toward that 80% to be conservative and say, I'm probably giving up some PIC hours there, but I've got enough overall hours. I'm confident that I'm competitive anyway.
Sure. The other thing we hear that's kind of different for Air Force guys, and I know the answer, but I'd like to hear you tell everyone who's listening, who might not have been asking this question before, but can you define what civilian PIC as opposed to military primary time and secondary time and other, for that matter? Like, how does all that correlate?
I get this question all the time, even after I've written the articles. So the most important thing to remember is there is almost zero correlation between the Air Force's definition of primary time and anybody else's definition of pilot in command, just separate those completely and assume they're completely different. And then for pilot in command, it gets even more complicated because the FAA has a definition in the Federal Aviation Regulations, and the airlines use a different definition, only a part of that. So the FAA's definition basically says three things. It says, one, if you're flying solo, that's pilot in command. Two, if you were the sole manipulator of the controls for any portion of the flight, that you get to log pilot in command for that portion. And then three, if you were the person who signed for the aircraft, you were the overall commander for that flight, you get to log the entire flight as pilot in command.
So could you potentially have the pilot flying as the sole manipulator and then an instructor in the jump seat as the A code also logging PIC? So two people logging PIC on the same sortie?
By the FAA standards, yes. So by the airline standards, the answer would be no, because the airline limits that definition even further, and they only give you credit if you were the person who was the overall commander for that flight. You were the person who signed the flight orders, who owned or rented the aircraft, who was in the left seat as the overall aircraft commander.
Sure. So from an Air Force perspective, whoever holds the A code, the aircraft commander.
Yeah. Sure. The A code on the flight orders, who signed the flight orders, that's the one who gets pilot in command.
That makes sense.
Amazing to me that three different entities, the DOD, the FAA, and big business, don't seem to join up all in one nexus of beauty. Shocking, yeah. To say the
imagine
least.
That.
Yeah, I know. That's amazing. That always blew me away when I was going through this whole process, which I don't envy Matthew or anybody else doing again. But
no, I don't.
I do feel it. It's very, very important that we talk about it. And, I mean, some of these questions, when I was going through it, I didn't want to ask because I felt stupid, you know, and I remember finally I had to ask somebody, and I'd ask somebody in my reserve unit, and they're like, man, you don't know the difference between these? And I go, no, I don't. Can you explain it to me? And then I'd realize that they didn't really know it either, 100% correct, because they'd been so far removed from it. Some been at the airlines for 10 years, and they're like, well, the FAR says this, so use that. I'm like, I don't think that's what they mean, but that's a really good, good definition to kind of blanket statement. Jason, I have a question in regards to gotchas.
Yeah.
What have you seen, or what did you go through as you kind of reviewed your logbook to make sure it was up to snuff when you took it to Delta? What did you see are gotchas out there that guys just kind of either they overlook it or they try it, like you know, you were talking about, hey, I'm going to add a few hours by saying 90% just so I meet the mins or be competitive. Are there any gotchas out there like that or things that you might have seen that could get guys in a little bit of trouble when they go for that interview?
Sure. One thing I noticed when I was going through my logbook for Delta is I'd record, you know, some details about a flight, you know, hey, there were clouds or there were bumps or whatever, you know. And a couple I had, you know, joking around, I'd put some comments in there that I didn't want the Delta recruiters to see. So I kind of, in the version they got, I made sure to kind of tone that down a little bit. The other thing that I tell guys is just don't get greedy. I see a lot of people, you know, sitting in front of Excel for hours on end, especially out in Kandahar, you know, it's all we had to do out there. So guys would be sitting in front of Excel for hours trying to see how they could fudge their numbers and get them to look the best. My goal walking into the interview, I knew I was going to be nervous. I didn't want to have to tap dance answering questions about my logbook. I wanted to be conservative enough that I could confidently look them in the eye and say, this is what I came up with. It's probably conservative, so I'm probably a little bit better than what you see here, but this is the best answer I can get you based on the records the Air Force had for me, something like that.
That is outstanding advice. I hope everybody listens to that. I could not agree more. Do not get greedy. That is the surefire way, especially I can tell you from experience with friends of mine, if you go through Southwest interview and your logbook is a little bit of a mess, they will come at you pretty hard, or they used to at least come at you pretty hard and discuss it. And if you try to fudge your way through it, I don't think you're going to do very well in that interview. So that I couldn't agree more. That's great advice.
Yeah. I got a question about the 0.3 conversion that you hear about a lot too with can you tell us about that?
Yeah, so basically the FAA rules say you start logging time when the engine starts and you quit logging time when the engine stops, and the Air Force, I don't know, maybe the whole military, basically logs from takeoff to landing. So a civilian pilot is going to log more time if they taxi around a lot than the Air Force pilot per sortie. Mm-hmm. So the idea is they'll give you an extra 0.2 hours, 0.3 hours, or 0.3 times your total flight time, whatever, to kind of even out the civilian versus military hours thing.
Sure.
And a lot of guys, again, I've seen them just poring over their logbooks trying to figure out exactly how much 0.3 or not to put in there. My rule of thumb is, first off, the airlines that use that want that, they'll be very specific about it. They'll tell you, add 0.3 to each military sortie. And some airlines let you submit a resume, some don't. What I would do if I was going to submit that resume, I would put on there all of my numbers as if there was no conversion whatsoever in one column, and then have the very next column over, have all those numbers again, adding in the 0.3 conversion, and just explain with a note what I'm doing there.
Sure.
So they can see your math and they can see what the raw numbers are. I always want to give them the opportunity to look at the raw numbers and take that and do what they want with it if they want to just have that.
Sure. And I just literally just did that calculation right now, and it comes out to be about 200 hours for me is the difference. So
yeah. It's not insignificant, but right. At the same time, I see a lot of people really sweating the hours, and you know, let's look at the industry. There are tens of thousands of pilots retiring in the next 15 to 30 years. And 10 years from now, I will be halfway up the Delta seniority list. It's unheard of. There is no way the airlines are going to be able to get enough pilots to staff what they need. So you're not going to have to, you know, scrimp and fudge every little hour you have in there, every little tenth, to try to look competitive enough. If you're a military pilot, for sure, you're going to be competitive, and you can afford to be a little bit conservative, in my opinion. And even for a civilian pilot, if you get up into the, you know, 2,000-3,000+ hour range, they're going to need you bad enough that you don't need to be greedy. You can be a little bit conservative. I think you're still going to be competitive.
Yeah, that integrity stuff is huge, Jason. You're so right on. I remember when I was piecing together my log, I'm sure you went through the exact same thing, where I said I'd rather be conservative. Once I got the interview, who cares how many hours I have? It was all about, what am I going to do at the interview? What am I going to do in regards to how am I going to explain my logbook? If I had to try to, like you said earlier, tap dance my way through it, it was over. There's just no way you can do that correctly. And so I think you're spot on with that kind of idea. I guess my final question, because of the kind of where I'm at now that I'm done with all that nonsense of going through the torturous interview progression, as it were. Keeping a logbook now, there's some guys who do it. I do not. And I'm one of those dreadful human beings that don't have a logbook. If I wanted to get back into it for the circumstance that you said earlier, maybe somebody buying my own airplane for insurance purposes, do you know of anything out there where I can take the hours that I get from my civilian flying job at Delta and just easily convert them? Or is it going to be the same old manual entry, print out the little ticket and go manually enter? Aside from just doing the, I got it on my cell phone and it goes to the cloud or whatever. Is there anything where I can, especially, and I'll use Delta for an example, is there any way I can go back and recapture my hours and then just get it put in? I can put it into a spreadsheet or whatever. Is there a way the companies can provide that with me?
I've heard there is. I haven't found it yet. I've heard of a service where they can go into the Delta database and pull out all your individual stuff and give it to you in a report, but I haven't found it yet.
Okay. I assume the same would probably be at, you know, United or whatever. They do the same thing. I knew Atlas had that exact thing. They put it online. No kidding. It was almost like it was destined to be. They put it online probably about maybe 2 weeks before my interview at Delta. And I was like, sweet, print. Yeah, I know. It was just perfect. Yeah. It was like, sweet, print it out. Boom, I'm good to go. Yeah, so that's really great stuff. And I think you are going to get a lot more questions that are going to be very, very
individualistic. So check your email, because I got a feeling a couple networkers out there will be wanting to ask you a few questions.
Yeah, I'll bet everyone's, you know, their particular situation varies slightly, but
yeah,
those were some great rules of thumb that you gave us.
Yeah, I'm happy to answer questions. Send them my way. And if anybody has, you know, bigger, more common questions that are worth researching and writing an article about, let me know. Happy to look through that stuff.
Yeah, absolutely. How often do you write articles on that blog? I mean, what's the production rate over there?
It's kind of whenever I have time. You know, some weeks I'll write 2 or 3, 4 articles, and sometimes it'll be a couple of weeks. I actually took a couple of years off while I was busy with the Air Force and life, and I've kind of gotten back to it in the last year.
Well, if someone wanted to get in touch with you, how would they go ahead and where would they contact you?
Jason@aviationbull.com is probably a good way to go. That's a nice, easy address.
Okay. And they could probably get a hold of you within TPN also.
Yeah, use TPN. Find me on Facebook, or I'm on the actual TPN. It's TPN.org, right?
Yep.
Yeah, I've set up a profile there, and you should be able to personal message me through that one too.
Cool.
Awesome. That's our first hit for, hey, go use the website. That wasn't one of us, Matt. That's a pretty big deal.
Yeah, absolutely.
That's like milestone. That's milestone stuff.
What do you think of the new portal? Are you enjoying it?
Yeah, I love it. I think it's a cool platform. I think it's going to be very useful. So I set my profile up on there. I uploaded some pictures from my profile and all that. So hopefully you can all find me out there and shoot me some messages.
Yeah, one of our big goals for that is really letting it become a repository for information, things like that spreadsheet that you were talking about. And
yeah.
I know there's a lot of those sorts of things out there, and resume and letter of recommendation templates, those sorts of things, just to help guys get, you know, just that little edge and save some time. I think there's a lot of stuff that members can share. So
exactly.
The address for that website is thepilotnetwork.org. You can also email Adam or I at heyguys@thepilotnetwork.org. If you like what TPN is and what it's done for you, if you get some edutainment out of it, please consider supporting us on our Patreon campaign. We start at $1 a month for anyone willing to help out and support the network. So that's at patreon.com/thepilotnetwork.
Jason, we want to thank you again for joining us, and we look forward to talking to you again here soon about a lot more and interesting stuff to come, especially in regards to, and this will be a little teaser, interesting stuff about pilot pay and should I stay or should I go. Some of you know what I'm talking about, some of you don't. So Jason, we will talk to you soon, and thanks again for joining us.
Yeah, thanks for the invite. It was great to talk to you guys.